Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Welcome to the Test Match Reaction Special on the Attacking Scrum Podcast. The Lions overcome a pretty drab first half performance to put away the Springboks in the second half in a unique test, to say the very least. We had, in my opinion, one of the all-time best ever Lions performances from Courtney Laws. I thought he was stunning. And I know another man who thought exactly the same, who's developed an almighty man crush on him, and that's Dan Killick. How are you, Dan?
I'm well, thanks, Jed. Yeah, Courtney Laws. I used to quite dislike him because he used to leather the smallest guys on the park, but he leathers everyone now. So yeah, I adore him.
Yeah, you were just putting yourself in that position of being one of those outside halves, taking the ball above your head and getting clattered by him as he did for many years. But that was a monumental performance. We've also got Yestin with us. How are you, Yestin?
Yeah, I'm joining Dan on that man crush. if so, he's not short of male attention. Courtney Laws. I was really surprised that he didn't get man of the match. To be honest,
I thought Itoje was the official man of the match, right? And he was excellent. He was absolutely excellent as well. But I honestly thought Laws, for me, it was like Warburton in that second test in 2013. It was like Scott Gibbs in 97. It was, you know, whatever the other examples are. It was just Herculean effort, I thought, in a strange game.
Just to go on the Itoje thing, there was one moment that I just thought was golden from him, which had nothing to do with the rugby. It was early on in the game, and the referee warned the Lions forwards to stay behind the back foot on a ruck that South Africa had won. And Itoje raised his thumb and smiled at the referee. And I just thought, if I had Evan Etzebeth or Mostert or Stefan, you know, or De Toit or anybody coming round the corner at me in about 0.7 seconds, the last thing I'd be doing was raising a thumb to the referee. And I just thought that was a beautiful moment of him kind of going, yeah, I know I'm a bit, you know, I've got this rep, but I'm going to be charm and calm in the face of adversity. So that was a beautiful little cameo moment of his.
Yeah, I thought his performance, actually, and obviously we'll get stuck into all of this, but the critics of Mauro Itoje have, you know, have said, oh, he gives away far too many penalties and stuff like this. And yesterday was just the example of when he's on the right side of the ref. And again, there were some of those penalties. I thought the turnover on our own 5-meter line that he got, which was a crucial point in the game, was really what I thought was their penalty. I didn't think he was supporting his own body weight, but it doesn't matter. It's, you know, it is about what you get away with, the way you play. And he did that brilliantly yesterday, played right to the line. I thought that was, you know, that was a hugely important thing. We have to say a quick mention to the Mighty Murph before we get underway. We were hoping to have a full house of all four of us represented here, but Murph's had to pull out a bit like Wyn Jones just prior to kickoff. But we will have no shortage of things to talk about as we go on. We've also got a few listeners' questions as well. So stick with us for the next hour or so. We've got loads of reaction to the first test, and of course, we'll be previewing the second test. Something you and I were chatting about, Dan, though, before we came on air, is literally as soon as you logged into this Zoom meeting, you said, it feels like a Lions tour now. Talk me through that, because you got super excited yesterday, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I mean, before yesterday, it didn't really feel like a Lions tour to me for, you know, I guess a number of reasons. But yeah, yesterday I had a good build up. Actually, I went to that Rugby Pass event down at London Welsh on Thursday, where there was a panel of Stephen Ferris, Jamie Roberts, Andy Goode, Jim Hamilton. So that sort of built, you know, started to get everything going down at a rugby club as well. Then I went to watch the game actually in Richmond with a group of friends in a pub. So in an environment where there were other people, and it just felt good. You know, it felt like a Lions tour. It really did.
I think that's the thing for me is this is going to sound awful, and I know I sound like the ghost at the feast, and I have done all year, but I just didn't get excited the whole time. It's so weird. I've never felt not excited about a Lions or a Wales win. I think for me, and because that sounds like you're being, you know, this isn't me being glib on the players and saying that, you know, they didn't put a huge amount of effort in and it wasn't a big test match. I honestly just think the lack of fans, having gone through sport without fans, then having it back and, you know, having certain amount of rugby with some fans in there, then you've witnessed the Euros and all that, and you see how much fans add to an occasion. It just reminded me the whole time, like when I stuck the telly on, I was like, this doesn't feel like a Lions test. And I felt that throughout the game as well, which is really, I don't know whether that just says something about me or it's just that, it's not clicking. What do you think, Justin?
I wonder whether the whole situation with it impacted the commentary as well, I think, as well. It doesn't, there's no real rising of the atmosphere or the peaks and troughs of excitement or the those moments of panic when either team is defending on its own line. Situations like that are quite, seem less tense because of the lack of crowd noise.
I think it
impacts on their on the way that the game is commentated.
I think in particular, like, you think back to that moment, like when Am absolutely nailed Daly early on, and you just think, you can imagine what the box section of the crowd would have done if they were, you know, if they were in there, and it just gives that intensity to a test match. And like I say, I don't know if it's just the fact that we've now experienced sport with fans back in, that I don't know if I just kept dreaming about what it could have been rather than enjoying the moment, which isn't, you know, which isn't great. But I think, like Dan said, like, maybe if I'd have watched it in a pub with people where there's an atmosphere being generated in the surroundings that you're in, perhaps it would have been a bit different. But I don't know.
I think that's a big part of it, isn't it? Because the Lions is as much about the fact, you know, so much about the fans, isn't it? That if you can get somewhere where you are with others, if it's safe, it just takes you to slightly more to that place where you need to be, and you can have a little chat as well, and because it's not the same, is it? It just isn't. But you can. It's probably that's as close as we're going to get to it, is to get into a rugby club or a you know, get a group together. Really.
What did it feel like, Dan? Did it feel like previous Lions tours that you might have spent time in? Did it feel exactly the same?
No, it didn't feel exactly the same. No, it was subdued. But it just felt, I suppose, a lot better than it had felt, you know, in the earlier warm-up games. But I mean, where I, you know, my starting point was obviously very, very low. So it felt, you know, it felt a lot better. But before that, I must admit, I was, you know, it was pretty flat for me. So anything was going to feel good. But I had a good week, you know, with going down to London Welsh beforehand, which, and then that provided a bit of a catalyst. And then to going out on the Saturday. So it just lifted it for me.
I spent more time sort of swatting up, not swatting up, but I watched the 97 official video on Amazon the night before to try and get myself in the mood, as it were.
Oh, brilliant.
And it, you know, it's hardly the revelation of 97, you know, it's not, it's, you know, 2017, you know, it's a lot more sanitized, mm-hmm. isn't it, than living with the Lions. But there were still insights, and it did make you think about a couple of comments I've heard on podcasts today, listening back to people's opinions about the game, about say Khaleesi's huge influence off the pitch, and the way that he galvanizes the rest of the team, even if his own performance isn't necessarily up to his own high standards, that he had to be there in order to galvanize everybody else. And there were little things like that that you realize that also, I just think, gives you a lot more insight into Gatland's way of, he's very much like a CEO of a company, isn't he?
Oh, it's ruthless and it's calculated. And I don't know, there's just no room for any emotion in any of his decision-making, I think.
And even during the game, he's saying, almost as if pointedly saying, well, why didn't he catch it, pass it and beat the man? You know, almost like going, looking over to Rob Howley, almost like, why haven't you sorted that out? You know, he's kind of free of that individual burden that most coaches would probably take on board. And Gatland appears to be immune to that feeling that's my responsibility or it's my fault. He very much allowed all the other coaches to be in charge of their particular discipline. And I wonder whether that's the same now. I can only imagine that's his style and that's the way he works. And that's how it was yesterday, you know?
Yeah, it's really interesting, Justin, you say about that, you know, he comes across like a CEO. He really does, doesn't he? That businessman like approach, or you know, to the game, no emotion, just literally looks, you know, he's so pragmatic, isn't it? And I thought yesterday was, you know, it was a Gatland, it was 1-0 to Gatland, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was super.
I mean, let's put aside my misery and just general melancholia for a while, because performance-wise, I mean, it was a really, really odd test match, because I texted you at half-time, Dan. I was like, we're getting munched in the scrum. We're getting done at the breakdown. And second half, South Africa could not lay a finger on the Lions. I think Warburton mentioned it on commentary, and he was just like, keep hold of the ball and they will give away penalties. And they gave away penalty after penalty after penalty. And I think that it just shows, yeah, it was a bold team selection from Gatland. I think there probably will be a few changes, and we'll get onto that in the second half. But, you know, it worked. And South Africa, you know, brought on a new front row at half time, and it didn't have any positive impact on the game. And I think that the more the second half went on, the more once the Lions took the lead, I was like, yeah, I didn't really feel that nervous about it. I was just like, I think they're going to win this.
Yeah, it was, I found, looking back, at the time, obviously, the when they said the front row, you know, the bomb squad are on, you thought, oh God, it, you know, they if they get the first points of the second half, then it is going to be game over. And I'd actually out of all of my sort of a bunch of friends, I was the only one who picked the box to win, and it was a similar scoreline, but I predicted it to the box, and I thought that's how it was going to play out. I was pretty confident that that's how it was turning out. But in retrospect, it looks like they knew that they were going to blow up hugely in the last 20, and that the Lions were going to finish the game much stronger than they were going to, for obvious reasons, because they hadn't played together very much, and had players on the pitch who were not match ready, if they might have been match fit, and that they just were going to go right. It would be stupid to say that it was a panicked move, but putting those three on straight on in the second half meant that they felt that if they could score six more points with no answer, that the game was, they were far enough ahead to close the game out. And it was just, that was the gamble they took. And like you said, that's why you have to give the praise to Gatland and the other coaches for transforming that, for allowing, you know, from making the Lions come out of the traps really quickly in the second half. But that's how South Africa were definitely, that's how they were looking at the game, because they knew they weren't going to be dominant in the last, from minute 60 to minute 80. So they gambled and they lost.
I think I said when we chatted after the South Africa A game that it was, they just looked like a boxer who had gone really hard for eight rounds and been completely dominant, but were then blowing and had punched themselves out. And exactly the same thing happened yesterday. You know, if maybe not eight rounds, six rounds, you know, they were all over the lines in the first half, and then they didn't have not even just the fitness, but it was like, how do you change the game plan slightly? And they didn't have any other tactic really, other than, and to be fair, we should point out that I think they were a bit unlucky with a couple of refereeing decisions. You could have said that maybe their try was a knock on. I don't think we saw enough of that. But then also I'm not particularly convinced that he was in front of the kicker for the disallowed try, but I also thought it was a forward pass. Like, it was just a bit of a mad game in terms of decisions. But so, you know, things could very easily have gone the other way, but it was the classic David Coleman game of two halves. Lions utterly dominant in the second, South Africa utterly dominant in the first, and it was, you know, it was the Lions who finished strongest and got over the line. Anything else you noticed, Dan, from you know, from like a coaching selection point of view that really stood out?
I guess just generally, I did think it was masterminded beautifully by, you know, by Gatland and the coaches. I just think he will be thinking, you know, I've done him there. And I keep on coming back to Gatland, but it almost like over the players, which doesn't seem quite right, but it just seemed like it had Gatland all over it. I think the fact of bringing Alan Wynne-Jones into the side and having his sort of leadership, his sort of sharpness, just the way in which he goes about his business with the ref, and I think it was just brilliant, you know, that side of it. And Itoje quite rightly has got a lot of the headlines, but Alan Wynne-Jones did so much stuff in that game to complement Itoje and let him do what he does. That I just think, again, it's another, you know, you've got to tip your hat again to Gatland for putting Alan Wynne-Jones in there, because it was a gamble, wasn't it? But it probably was a gamble, really. But boy, did it come off, you know.
To go back to the CEO point, you know, only 3 weeks ago he'd made Conor Murray captain and then doesn't select him to start. You know, and we said the main reason he was selected as captain, or one of perhaps one of the reasons he was selected as captain, because he was very much a favourite to start in his position. And again, that says something about Gatland's ability to look and pick ruthlessly and just say, actually, Price is the form nine. I've seen enough. I'm going with him. And I'm bringing Alan Wynne-Jones back in. I know he'll be ready. I know here's what he's capable of doing. And again, I think that selection, like we said, is the biggest thing when it comes to being an international head coach. And, you know, ultimately you can say he got it right. I was a bit worried about that selection, as I think a lot of people were, but you know,
I think you were right to be, you know, it was sensible to be worried as well, wasn't it? It was a big call, but again, he got that call right. And I think also the substitutions that Gatland made were, you know, the forwards in particular then made a big impact, didn't they? South Africa got theirs wrong, as you know, you and Justin alluded to, and the Lions got their subs right.
The thing that,
if we go through the gambles, so you go, well, it wasn't a gamble, but I guess it was to a certain extent, because you could have started with Mako. Do you think he got the gamble right with Rory Sutherland?
No, he got stuffed in the scrum.
Okay.
He had a difficult day
and he's a fine talent. But yeah, I think, like we said, you know, the early scrums were going to be the ones that mattered. Strangely, their strongest scrummagers coming off the bench didn't quite have the impact that we anticipated. But I just felt like Mako, and I know, because we had a bit of a debate over WhatsApp, didn't we, about it? And because Mako has had times where he struggled at the scrum time, but he's also just got so much big match, test match experience that's why I would have favoured him after Wynne-Jones, you know, after Wynne-Jones pulled out. But he made a massive impact off the bench and did a great job. So that one, I would say, he didn't get right.
What about Luke Cowan-Dickie? Was that a gamble that paid off? It was a contentious selection.
I thought he had quite a tough game. I thought that he missed a couple of tackles where I think they'd probably been watching the tapes where, you know, he goes very, very low. The South Africans like leapt over him, and a couple of the lineouts were off as well. And I know we've talked about the scrummaging side of things before. Who knows? You know, I'm not a front row specialist. I don't think any of us are.
I thought you were, Dan.
Yeah, I know. but it was a difficult day for him, wasn't he? But he took the try well, didn't he?
He showed what we know he's very, very good at. You know, he's very, very good at that. Opportunistic stuff. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't know.
So
whether that one paid off or not, really.
We're all in agreement that the Alan Wynne experiment worked.
Yeah, I didn't think he perhaps had his most eye-catching performance, but I think, like you were saying about Sia Kalisa yesterday, that it's just the calmness that it brings. You know, if the Lions had gone in with that much of a deficit at half time, with Murray leading them, or anyone leading them for that matter, I don't think that it would have. You could want anyone better to keep you calm in that scenario than Alan Wynne-Jones, or to give you a kick up the arse, or whatever it is that you need. And I think that's where that captaincy really, really helps. And so I think that one paid off. He was, you know, he's a solid 7 out of 10 for me, but the leadership is what made it a gamble that paid off.
Okay. It's quite a lot. You realise just how many rolling the dice you did. Okay, so all three of us are in agreement about Laws, that was a gamble that definitely paid off.
Oh yeah.
What about Conan?
I wouldn't be surprised to see Toby come in for Conan. But again, I obviously have famously Toby shaded glasses on. You know, I don't think he did anything wrong. There was a couple of decent bits, got through plenty of work. I just I don't know. I just think that Topi's world class. Still,
I was watching some Squidge rugby analysis, just looking back to, you know, almost before the matches started, about, you know, how they're going, how the Lions are going to play, you know, and they, and it was interesting, you know, Faletau comes into every single thing because he just says, well, because he's Faletau, and he doesn't ever do anything ever wrong.
Strangely, just while we're on that though, thinking back, you know, because we all obviously think of Topi as a real Gatland favourite, right? But you think back to 2013, he picked Heaslip over him in two tests, I think. Obviously, 2017 was different. He played all three, but again, didn't perhaps have that competition there because Billy Vunipola was injured, was he? I think he was injured.
Did he just decide he couldn't be bothered?
No, that was this year.
He had a broken arm at one point.
I think he missed 2017 through injury. So I don't know, maybe he's just not quite the, he's not quite the Gatland favourite that, but again, this is CEO Gatland, isn't it? This is it. You know, it's,
yeah,
it's what's the, you know, what does the business need?
Yeah. Okay. So Tom, Ali slash Tommy Price was a bone of contention on the WhatsApp group. I thought it was well worth a gamble personally, and if nothing else, but he threw a dive pass that was reminiscent of Gareth Edwards at his finest. Not Rupert Moon, you know, much as I love Rupert Moon, you know, his dive passes tend to just go end over end to the outside half, and hit the outside half's knees. I thought he was tidy, but you know, without the criticism that he's come into, is that he didn't harry or hassle Faf de Klerk enough. But I wonder whether that was an instruction in a way. I don't know. I can't imagine that he naturally would have said, you know, I'm not going to go near him. Whether they just said, let Curry knock him about.
You take this one first, Dan. Ali slash Tommy Price. What did you make of that as a selection, and did it pay off?
Yeah. Also on this, I actually don't know his name anymore because I'm so, I just have to go with Price because it's so, the pod's
I call him Tommy Price. People just keep on picking me up on it.
He doesn't look like a Tommy either, does he? Like, he doesn't look like a Tommy Price. I don't know. It's just fantastic.
He sounds like one now. He's Tommy Price. Yeah, I thought Tommy Price. I thought he had a decent game, and I could see that there seems to be mixed opinion on him. I think, you know, Faf had a decent game. I think it's difficult to get near him yesterday, and the pack, you know, their pack was so on top in the first, you know, in the first half that I think he did well. You know, I think he, you know, it was a big, big game for him, and I thought his service was zippy at times, not always, but at times, and his kicking was on point, and his link up play through the kicks with Van der Merwe was spot on. And
yeah, particularly defensively, wasn't it? Those awful defensive kicks where you see a box kick from the 22 and you just go, oh, I don't like the look of this. And they came off, didn't they? More often than not.
They did, yeah. And his, the way in which he was totally in tune with his teammates, you know, Van der Merwe, meant that we really won that battle. And if he got that wrong, it's such fine margins. If he got that wrong with those, with you know, the attacking prowess of their back three, it could have been good night. So all in all, I thought he had a very decent game, really.
What about you, Jed?
I thought in the first half he found it a big step up. That's the biggest game he's ever played in, and I think it kind of showed. He got snagged a couple of times. What really impressed me was how he wasn't phased, and I think that, you know, he made some errors in that first half, but Dan's right, there was some good service at times, and the game hinged on a box kick that he put in at the start of the second half that South Africa misjudged. And from there on in, it was a different game. And then Murray comes off the bench and does the same things. He's obviously the box kicking is the best, you know, it was one of the biggest assets that Murray has. It's always easier wearing 21 than it is 9. It just is. You know what I mean? How often have we said that about Wales, where the replacement line has come on and we go, oh, he's got to start next week. I thought Price had, it was by no means a flawless performance, but it also, there were points in there that, you know, were really quite admirable. I think he has something about him. I think he has a strong sense of belief, and he seems like someone who has the mentality to keep playing. So again, I don't know whether Gatland's seen something like that in him as well. But even though he made a few mistakes, he didn't look phased.
Okay, next up, I would say the next contentious one would be Elliot Daly at 13.
I was a big fan of it, but it didn't work. And neither is Dan's dog, by the sound of it.
Yeah, he's chipping in with his comments
there. Or Dan's stomach, whichever one that was.
Yeah, Daly. I really wanted it to work. I don't think it worked, but I think that that was partly to do with how the Lions played, really.
Yeah, I don't think it was his fault, but how many times did he have the ball 30 metres behind the gain line and then try to dart inside and got munched by someone? It was hard.
Yeah.
It was a hard ask.
But I think it was, the way in which we played meant that it was going to be difficult for him. And also, he hasn't played in, I don't think he's played with, that's a brand new centre partnership, isn't
in fact,
it, as well?
That was the only combination who had played together on this tour.
Oh, they have.
But again, not one outing. Every other combination, back three, half backs, back row, second row, front row, none of whom had played together on tour.
Yeah, it was. I thought it was. He definitely had a difficult game, didn't he? But he stuck in there, and that's. I think he got marginally better as the game went on. And I think that looking at the game back, there was a couple of moments where if the pass had gone to him, he could have got on the outside. It didn't happen. And so watching it back, there is enough there to see why Gatland picked him. Dog doesn't agree. Gatland picked him at 13, but it ultimately didn't work, did it, on the day.
Yeah, I don't think it did. But again, much like Price, I thought that, Daly gave away two daft penalties that it would be very easy to chastise him for. But I thought he got better as the game went on. And, and again, it was more donkey work than it was anything particularly flash. So, that actually is the thing that I think that all the players and the coaching staff should be proud of, is they did not get fazed by the fact that South Africa are that far away. They didn't start doing anything particularly stupid and stuck to the game plan. And they out-arm wrestled South Africa, which is a very, very hard thing to do. And fair play to Daly. I thought he was going to be that little bit of class in the back line that gave the odd try-scoring opportunity or the odd breakout of nothing. It didn't quite work out that way, but he wasn't fazed by the mistakes that he made and stuck it out to grind out the victory.
Yeah, again, referring back to Squid Rugby, after the A game, there was an analysis that this super, super deep lying thing is a way of Peter Steff to tie. Of drawing him in, almost like basically Elliot Daly is bait, act as bait for to take him out of the game. And so you're hoping that Daly gets the ball and it manages to distribute it while getting smashed by one of the most vibrant flankers in world rugby. And he just basically takes one for the team in order for them to get to that famed edge. But it didn't work because they didn't really play that game, did they, in any way?
No, and there was no real fluid back play to speak of, was there? I wouldn't say.
No, and so we can talk about how that pans out for next week. But I'd like to... So next up, Van der Merwe... What's your
big thumbs up? Big thumbs up for me. thought, you know, just in a hard game to shine in, I thought that he did what he's done all tour, and he's just so sodding hard to put down. Yeah, I don't know. I thought he, out of all of those gambles, he was probably the one that that impressed me the most, I would say. Apart from Laws, if we're calling Laws a gamble, then you know, it's obviously Laws. But you know, in terms of the inexperienced players out there, I thought he did a really good job. I could see Liam starting next week, strangely, but I do think he did a sterling performance, Dan.
I was concerned about him starting when he was named because of his defence. I had a feeling that he was going to get turned and potentially made to look a little bit silly. But I think I've been made to look silly, really. I thought he had a great game. And it started for me with Biggers, you know, in the first 5 minutes when Bigger got the ball and put up an almighty up and under. And Van der Merwe was after it, wasn't he? And got on top of Colby, which I think knocked his confidence, actually. He was right up, wasn't he? And it sort of set the tone from there. And he was a nuisance, wasn't he? He was into everything. He got a couple of vital tap backs, big hits, and really contributed to a number of game-changing moments, really. So for me, it was another great call by Gatland, and he's got to start next week for that.
I tell you what, they say that we're like, you know, obviously we're the attacking scrum and it's, you know, good Welsh boys with a healthy bias, shall we say, towards, but everybody I've spoken to today, you know, has just gone on about how Van der Merwe, you know, has to make way for Josh Adams because of the fact that he didn't score that knock on, he didn't ground that knock on try. But I agree with you. There was just a couple of times that he got the ball from a standing start, you know, with very little room to work on along the left-hand touchline from Ali Price, and he just would. It would take a couple of them to take him down. He would make 2 meters at most, but it meant that he was drawing people out of the game. You know, the kind of people who, you know, after seeing that, you know, that early tackle on Daly from Am, you know, you just, that could have happened all day long. And it was those little annoying, Van der Merwe gets the ball and the South Africans have to at least put 2 men to get him down, gave them a little bit of leeway to start progressing down the other side. So I don't get anything in his performance personally that says he's... I see what you're saying, Jed.
Do we think that Josh Adams scores it? And again, you know, we're all massive fans of Josh Adams, but do we think he scores that try? It wasn't like a... I don't think it was like, you know, Ugo Monier in 2009, where you're just like, you know, you'd expect wingers to bury those chances. I thought it was... I didn't think it was a, you know, a stonewall missed sitter.
No, I agree.
Nor do I. I suppose, you know, could we see Josh Adams, who is, you know, a phenomenal player, but some of the bits that Van der Merwe did, could we see that happening from Josh Adams? I suppose it's slightly unfair to compare because they're different types of players, but I don't think there was, if he doesn't get selected, I think it would be really unfair on him because he, you know, then there is, Justin, as you're saying, there's a lot of people saying that Josh Adams comes in. But off that performance, if it is, it has to be for some other tactic because he couldn't have done any more for me, really.
If it's a tactical change, then Liam comes in, I think. Do you know what I mean? I think if you go, right, we want more solidity defensively, then you go for Liam. If you want if you want an out-and-out winger, then you go for either Adams or Van der Merwe. And I don't I don't necessarily see what difference.
Some people are calling for both, though, aren't they? For both Liam and Josh Adams.
In place of who? In place of Hogg, then?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of chat about that.
Hogg isn't... I wouldn't say Hogg was a contentious selection, but would you... But because the competition is so hot in the back three, it's worth chucking him in as the last one, I think. Do you think that let's save our powder, keep our powder dry for what the changes we'd make? But do you think that he would be? How did you think he went, Hogg?
Solid, if unspectacular, and I don't think he was particularly bad. I don't think he was particularly eye-catching, which is what you want from Hogg. Dan?
Yeah, I tend to agree with you, really. I thought he was solid enough. I thought that he had a pretty decent game, really, considering the type of game it was. And a game with, you know, he hasn't had a huge amount of games, has he? And if we look at the quality or lack of quality in the games coming up to it, I think it was always going to be quite difficult for him. I must admit, I had to watch the game back to see whether, because there's so many comments about Liam Williams, you know, coming in for Hogg. I must admit, I thought that I maybe missed some bits that Hogg did, you know, some absolute howlers, or I can't see them. I think he had a you know, decent enough game. He was pretty solid, really, all things considered. So it wasn't spectacular by any means, but it was decent enough.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, my main issue with all of that doesn't circle around Hogg alone, but I was surprised at some of the most aimless, which clearly on reflection were not aimless, but those kicks that were practically across the pitch that LaRue put in and Pollard put in, which actually probably were the things that created the most chaos in the Lions' defence, in that they couldn't get their back row across the field quick enough. And what was happening, there was obviously the outside centre, the winger and the fullback were clustered in a fairly small space, and if the ball happened to end up in D'Alende's hands, as it did, then he only had to break one tackle to be clean through. And that's the whole point of that. My worry about that was that there was no management when that happened three times. Maybe did it. That I just wondered whether the Lions were over chasing and over competing for that ball, and they were, you know, they were asking too much of their back row to get across. So when you saw, say, Cowan Dickey or Curry desperately trying, it looked a bit desperate and a bit clueless almost, that they weren't even on. But you know, you can't expect them to get across the field quick enough. And I just wondered whether, I'm not saying it was Hogg's fault, but it feels like one of those three players needed to be lying a little deeper. You know who that game was calling out for, don't you? Bloody Lee Halfpenny.
Wow. Yeah.
A fully functioning Lee Halfpenny.
Yeah, sweep it through the backfield like a caretaker at a primary school. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I've never that thought has never crossed my mind before. Where, not that I don't,
it has mine, because I've presented a podcast with Dan for 5 years, who's always met, and to be fair, you know, has
I'm just going over to my shrine now. So in the corner. Oh,
well,
Lee Halfpenny, my lord.
The Lee Halfpenny wing of Dan's house.
He would have just been in the place to nail. You know, D'Alende would have gone, I've broken the first tackle, I'm through. Oh, and he would have found Halfpenny around his ankles in a millisecond, right? And I just think, I'm not saying that's all Hogg's responsibility, but it just felt like that three the outside centre and the wing and the fullback weren't quite. We're over chasing, and I think the Lions will get that right next week. I don't think they'll let that happen again.
Yeah, and there might be a few personnel changes to enforce that as well, which we've just about managed to keep our powder dry on that, because we're going to have a look at that in the second half of the podcast. We're also going to have a look at a couple of listeners' questions. I'm pretty certain that 95% of the listeners' questions this week were what changes would you make for next week, but That leads us very nicely onto everything that we've got coming up. But first, we're going to have this very quick break. Welcome to the second half of the Attacking Scrum Lions Test Match Special. It's reaction to the first test win in Cape Town. We've got another test in Cape Town coming up in the strangest of Lions tours. Looking ahead to next week then, I know we're all desperate to do this because it is the most fun part to sit here and play selector. As I say, we've had a number of questions in about this. Dan, what's the temptation for you? Keep things the same? Why change a winning formula? Or interested in a few changes to strengthen the squad?
I'm finding it really difficult. I'm going back and forth. Immediately after the game, I think I'd identified sort of three or four changes. And as the time passes, I'm finding myself almost making no changes. And Gatland doesn't tend to make changes, does he? If somebody has a little bit of an off game, he tends to give them another chance. You know, I think particularly in this situation where we've won, but then other times he looks at him. If there's something that he really dislikes, that can be them out and never to be seen again, you know, ever, like ever. So for me, there are a couple of changes, yeah, that I would be looking at.
Just before we get those, Yestin, are there changes to come from you as well?
Yeah, definitely.
All right, let's get stuck into it then. Front row, Wyn Jones comes in for me. Dan?
Wyn Jones comes in for me, yeah.
Yeah, I echo that.
Tyke Furlong still tight head?
Yeah, he played really well.
Yeah.
Yeah, thought he had a really good game.
And then Hooker, this is really tricky. It's really, really tricky because I thought Ken did brilliantly off the bench. But the fact that he was so brilliant off the bench is, do you leave him on the bench? See, my temptation is that I think Cowan Dickey is so good off the bench that I'd probably have Ken starting and emptying the tank and then Cowan Dickey coming on to make an impact. What do you reckon, Dan?
I would be going with that. I thought Ken Owens was fantastic. I thought he made a big impact in the scrum. I thought he actually got a number of, you know, how good was his passing as well? Mm. He was actually, you know, he's actually whipping the ball away quite nicely.
I told you he was a nine at heart.
Yeah, he was loving the nine, wasn't he? Lovely, lovely passing. No dive pass, Yestin.
No,
but,
disappointing, yeah.
Yeah, maybe next week.
He's got
to
work on his reverse pass as well, like Brendan Williams.
He's definitely got it in his locker, isn't he? But for me, Ken Owens to start and Cowan Dickey to come off the bench.
Yeah, second round.
I'm a bit scared as well about this selection. I was like you, Jed, I think. I wasn't really very stressed by the game generally. Mm. Or not kind of up there on that level that I normally would be. But the only time I got really overwrought was when we appeared to forget the Lions appeared to forget what their lineout calls were and just chucked the ball and nobody jumped.
Yeah.
And it was like, what? It was like, what happened there for three lineouts? They just completely fell apart. And that, obviously, that's not Cowan Dickey's responsibility. It was somebody, and I wondered whether Wyn Jones was the main caller normally, and I thought, don't be daft. I mean, you know, there's more than one person in that team who's capable of making the calls. But and I just that then I suddenly got all Jamie George on it and going, well, there's nobody better in the game than him. Da-da-da. And but I think I think it's really, I think there's no room for error at the lineouts at all.
Yeah.
And I think if they lose that, if they lose any momentum in the lineout battle, it's going to be a very uphill climb. And I can't help thinking they need to change it because it seems like the South Africans are very canny on their feet. You know, they can read how things are going. And they might have to revise the playbook because, let's face it, they had enough people they could throw up in the air. So why did they get found out after 30 minutes and suddenly panic?
The one that really concerned me was the one when he threw it to Sutherland and he was clearly, was never going to be straight. It just at that point, it's like it's not even about the line out not functioning. And I like the fact that you're going to just try and shore things up and go right and get away with one here. But it was so clear and obvious that thinking calmly stuff, that's not about whether you're working well as a unit. That's just about spotting what's in front of you and making the right call. And he didn't then. But like you said, you know, he bounced back and played very well. And he is without doubt in the form hooker on the tour. But for me, I think he can have more of an impact off the bench.
Yeah, I'll go with Ken in that case.
Second row, I think we're all sticking with. Famously, before the game, I said that I wanted Laws in there as a second row, and now I'm completely converted to he's the best six in the world. Second row, the same for you, Dan?
Yeah, second row partnership went very well.
And then Laws obviously starts at six. Any other changes in the back row?
Yeah, the back row, it didn't quite work for me. But Laws was fantastic, wasn't he? And you know, just really, you know, hard carries, you know, some big hits. Really, sort of, I think gave the Lions momentum when really at times we were going back. You know, we were in a bit of a rocky place. Conan, I thought, was you know, to use your phrase of being quite unfussy, he made some, you know, some solid carries. They weren't spectacular by any means, but he was quite solid.
I think he got through a lot of tackles and carries and stuff without it being hugely eye catching. There was one nice, you know, there was one nice bit of footwork and break, but I mean,
and I think it was always going to be like that, but I felt like something didn't quite work. And then, you know, Curry gave away, he did give away some pens, didn't he? I know he's a seven, so, you know, there's a likelihood that you're going to give away pens, but then can you give away pens? You know, some of these pens were soft and it did lead to us being behind, you know, going behind. And I don't know whether that's good enough, you know?
Both sevens could have been yellow carded. Without a doubt. So
yeah.
Curry could have been yellow carded for that cheap shot on Faftercliff.
He could have, couldn't he?
Because it was an open play as well. It was
brainless, that one.
And then, and likewise, you know, how Watson didn't get a card is beyond me.
Definite yellow.
I
didn't think Curry had his best game at all.
No.
But I think that the game plan, if you're going to play this, and presumably Gatland is going to stick to the same game plan, you need a big seven as well as a big six and a big eight. So I kind of think, well, you do the same again, because obviously Josh is very, very different. But Curry is just the biggest and probably most conventionally physical. So I guess you go the same again, seven.
Yeah, I'd just go. I'd agree. This is where we need Murph to start being authoritative, because we're getting a bit, you know, sort of like, yeah, we think that's it. But I wonder, is it madness to think of Josh being on the bench instead of Watson? Because I thought Watson needs just to be told to sit it out. I thought it was a really dumb play, and I just thought he didn't really, I don't know, over trying. I don't know what it was, but I know he's a solid player, but I wonder whether putting Josh and Byrne on the bench is you know, covers so many places. You know,
I think that's a great call. I think that's a great call, and I was mentioning to Jed off air yesterday that I actually started to watch late last night the Wales England game from the Six Nations just to see Navidi again, and the reason why I wanted to watch it was one to watch him up against Curry, because I thought he had a tough outing, but I think he's been magnificent on the tour, you know, as a whole. But I wanted to see what his work at the breakdown, because we were destroyed in the first half, weren't we? And he does so much to sort of just shore up the ball and then slow up their ball, and his sort of low center of gravity, and then the fact that he loves taking on, you know, the big boys, you know, he loves just mopping them up, holding them in. I just thought that first half performance, or, you know, we were really missing a Josh Navidi type character. We know it in Wales, don't we? That we're not the same without him. And he loves playing against the big guys. Mm. So yeah, your call of having him on the bench, and then, you know, the whole 6, 7, 8 as well. I could really see that working quite nicely. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, I mean, that was a concern for me with this side, is what happened if Conan had gone off injured? Who would have gone to 8? You know, is it Curry? Is it Byrne? Is it Laws? I mean, what? Yeah, I'm not quite sure what we'd have done in that scenario. Whereas obviously Josh, he would feel, out of the three back row positions, I don't think 8 is his best. But you also know he is an international class 8, so I don't have any problem with that at all. Toby comes in for Conan for me, because Toby's Toby, but yeah. I'm not sure Gatland will do the same thing.
So what do you do with 9 and 10?
Well, 10, I mean, 10 is a big one, isn't it? And I think we had a message from Matt Cornelius that said what do we do if bigger isn't going to be fit for this?
Was it definitely a HIA?
Yeah, I think it was.
It was, but he didn't hit his. There was no head contact. Was
yeah,
there?
I agree.
I found that very odd.
He didn't even hit it on the ground when he went down.
No, it's very strange. There was nothing that I could see anyway, Ben. But yeah, it was really, really odd. I think we need to start praying is what we need to do, because we need him.
All right. Well, I mean, yeah, obviously, if he's fit, he starts. But if he's not, who starts at 10? Yes,
oh. Well, you can't put Marcus Smith at 10. I'm sorry. I mean, I love the Cinderella story of nature of it, but
do you want to though, Yestin?
Of course I do.
On. Yeah,
Dan, you know me too well. It's Matthew Morgan all over again.
But Jeff's got him in.
Farrell obviously nailed not the decisive kick, but nailed a very important kick to make the last, you know, I'm sure he took about 2.5 minutes taking that kick as well. It felt like an eternity. I'm sure he took well past his minute. But he looked, I'm just got no confidence in Farrell at the moment. I'm desperately wrong, but in terms of with ball in hand, I've got absolutely no confidence that he even when they played on that penalty, he just dinked the ball through aimlessly, and it just felt like there was no purpose in his play at all. But maybe it's just my jitters rather than anything else. But
his performances at 10 at international level have been really, really poor for in the last however many 5, 6 times he's had that opportunity.
Well,
however,
one of the reasons I watched that the last Lions tour was to see Farrell playing at 10 and to remind myself, so I stopped being so bloody jittery. And you did realise he's not the player that he was on that tour.
But the thing that he does have, and again, this, you know, we touched on it last week, is big match game mentality. You know, I never felt like he was going to miss the kick, for example. I was like, well, no. You know, he's more than likely going to slot this. And he is incredibly mentally resilient. And you know, he's the kind of thing that, you know, he'd be working hard at trying to pull things together to it. So I think you have to go for him at 10. I don't, you know, I'm not a massive fan of him at 10. I think he's playing out of form at the moment, but you can't pick Marcus Smith there. And Finn's still on the tour, isn't he? But he's not played any rugby, and you can only presume that he's not fit. So, or, you know, not going to be match fit to start the second test at 10. So if Bigger isn't fit, then there is only one option, I'd say.
If Finn is fit, would you pick him, Jed?
Yes, but he's not. I don't think. And yeah, I think I would if he was fully fit. It's risky. I mean, they're just every time you pick Finn, it's risky, isn't it? But I'm a massive fan of his. And again, you know, we talk about mental resilience. Guy just doesn't, like, he is fearless. Whether, you know, he makes mistakes, but he's fearless. If he makes a mistake, it doesn't put him off throwing another massive four-man mispass, you know, which could make or break, you know, or one of those little dinks over the top, which is something that I...
Make or break the outside centre's ribs.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I probably would. But then, like, if it comes down to a tight test, I don't know, whose goal-kicking would you rather have, Owen Farrell or Finn Russell? I don't know. But like you say, I think Bigger is so, so important that I think, yeah, you get the rosary beads out, Dan.
Yeah. I wonder whether you...
Yes.
If Finn Russell is fit, could you... Would Ali or, you know, Tommy Price and Finn then... you know, work quite nicely. It is a hell of a gamble, isn't it? But, and then potentially have, you know, could you have Farrell, you know, Farrell inside him just to agree that he's not playing brilliantly, but he is that test match animal.
Have you got a bet on Farrell at 12? Is that what this is? You're peddling an agenda hard here, Dan.
Yeah, it's the test match animal thing that I
get it.
It's that presence that, like, just when the players talk as well, that, you know, they're really enjoying having him around. Like, it's almost like, you know, a player that isn't, you know, is coming to the end. Not that I'm saying this is the case with him, but they're coming to the end of their time. But you still want them on the park because they're a cool head, they're level, and you just feel better when they're there. I just wonder whether if we were to go down that with a different 10, whether having him in at 12 would just settle the ship a bit. Yeah.
If he was even close to being in form, you know, you could then consider like Finn at 10 and Farrell at 12. But right now, second test, you know, I think one of the things that functioned relatively well in the back line was Henshaw at 12. So I don't think you want to move him. And then, you know, we'll come on to discuss the centres in a minute. I think Farrell either starts at 10 if Bigger's injured, or he's on the bench again for me. I don't think you can. Yeah.
I think Farrell would be at 10. I think that's what he probably would go with. But I'd. It's not really me, but I'd potentially like to roll the dice at 10.
With who?
If he's fit, I would go.
Yeah.
I'd go with Finn.
It's a weird one. With Finn Russell. He's still on tour.
He's still there.
Still there. So. And there's no midweek games or anything to fill. But he can't be fit because otherwise, there's something odd about it. I can't make my mind up whether he's fit or not. I think it'd be too much to ask for him to start anyway.
You know. Maybe he's fallen out with his with his backs coach again.
If that had happened, he'd have known about it.
Yeah, he's fallen out, but he's got nowhere to go because he can't leave. So that is exactly what's happened, actually. Yestin's got it. Yeah, that's what's happened.
Gregor's blanking him.
Yeah, he's locked in a room somewhere. On the tens, though, how good... I from watching it back, Bigger was really good.
Yeah, I mean, it's a Dan Bigger kind of game, isn't it? Like, you know, it's I mean, that sounds really harsh. I messaged you boys in the first half and said, if my life depended on someone scoring a penalty kick, I'd want it to be Dan Bigger. And he duly missed the next one.
I know.
But then, yeah.
Never do that again,
Jed. I know. Then his goal kicking was good. His, you know, he's just, I told you, he doesn't feel pressure. He gets off on it.
From watching it back, I realised that where we broke the line, it was from his quick hands.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good point.
Which obviously he's not
renowned for.
He's not renowned for, and people don't comment on it. But Jed, you've said it from you know, his time over in England that you know, his passing game has been really, really on point. And yeah, he just had lovely quick hands which created space, and we that's when we penetrated the line. So I thought, hang on a minute, this is great from him.
They were so his hands were so quick, they couldn't say Bigger's hands. They just went quick hands, and they never gave him the props because they couldn't, because he'd been and gone. And
that's right. Yeah, I had to actually pause it to just check that it was him on two occasions, and it was brilliant, really quick. So yeah, fair play to him.
All right, into the centres then. For me, Henshaw stays. As much as I was a big advocate of Daly starting to add something different in the back line, if you're going with the same tactics again, personally, I think you'd go Chris Harris.
Yeah,
what's Dan thinking of another way to pedal Farrell at? Is there anything to be said for Farrell at 13?
I think you're giving him very hard time, Jed.
Again, have you listened to the last 5 years, Justin?
Yeah, I have, actually, yeah. But it's interesting what you said about Henshaw sticking to 12, because obviously the Aki v. Harris debate I think Harris would be my preferred option as well.
You know,
I can see the logic of, but on top of just my gut feeling, because I think he's more of a rugby player, you know, and also he is, you know, his reputation for his sort of defensive acumen in the outside areas is pretty established, but Aki is thunderous, but I don't think you can run into Am and I wonder if Pollard will be fit. He looked like he tweaked. It didn't look like a dead leg, did it? I don't know.
I haven't heard anything else on that, but it's...
But whoever he's running into, it's not going to be... You know, it's... Whoever Aki would be targeting to run into, he'd have to be taking a very long run up.
Yeah, I worry about Aki on the outside as well. I think, again, I think a centre as classy as Am or Dielende just would fancy taking Aki on the outside. I think that he's done some good things on tour.
Yeah.
But I think, again, like if we're determined to play no discernible, attractive rugby, which seems to be the case. Then you pick a defensive 13 as well, and I think Harris is the best of those.
Yeah, I think you're right. Talking of that my mate from Tonna, Claire, she messaged me halfway through the second half, just going, "I'm thoroughly depressed." You know, we do have to remember that it wasn't a spawny victory, but it wasn't. You know, it's a long way away from Australia, France, or you know, and I know that South Africa dictate the way the game is played. And it's in a way that that's a shame, because it would be nice if the Lions could dictate the pattern of play, but obviously that's not going to happen. And so the centres appear to be, we are, you know, we talked about this, didn't we, before the tour even, you know, before they even selected the teams, that the centres had to be basically almost like back rowers. And you would hope that then that there would be enough spark around them, pace, mobility of the back row, and the back three would be electric, that would help to get to the edges and make some and have some impact. So I would go, yeah. So you're not really going to mention Farrell as an option at 13, are you, Dan?
No, I'm not. I'm just going back and forth all the time with the backs, because it didn't work. But I just can't help but think that at times it was so close to working, but it went so wrong. If that makes any sense at all. And if Big is fit, bizarrely, I would actually keep the same back line, because, yeah, just watching it back, there was moments where it really could have worked. And I think that to keep the same back line as well, I almost don't think that it could go as bad as it did again. Yet we still won. So, yeah, so much of it for me depends on Bigger.
Well, yeah, I think everything depends on Bigger. I think he's absolutely crucial, particularly the game plan we're saying. I feel like Murph got in my head last week as well. Like I was kind of saying, yeah, there's definitely something up our sleeve. We haven't showed our cards yet. And Murph was saying, no, that, you know, they're not going to suddenly come out and play like the Barbarians. I just had this in my head, and there was... It was so much kicking. Like, and like, a win's a win, but, and I kind of think that if there'd been fans in there and the atmosphere had been pumping, and I probably wouldn't have cared, but it did feel like a really drab game of rugby, actually, particularly for a test. But, you know, that aside, I think that's obviously the style of play. I can't see that changing at all. So you may as well, for me, you go for a defensive 13. And then I wonder about the back three. You know, again, South Africa aren't going to suddenly start slinging the ball around, are they? They're going to try and do the same again and do it better. So that kicking game again comes into play. Any changes in the back three for you, Dan? I mean, you've just said you wanted to keep the back line the same, but. You've also said you're going back and forth. I wondered if you had a change of heart in the last 90 seconds.
Yeah, I am tempted with Liam Williams of 15. I really am. And switch Hogg to the bench. But I just think Hogg... I don't think he did anything... I don't know. I think there's going to be some changes tactically that Gatland will make, but I'm going to stick with it.
Yes, then what would you do in the back three?
Yeah, I'm definitely picking Liam. And again, it's not because Hogg had a poor game, but just that back three thing that I was talking about, just the defensive cohesiveness of the back three. Watson did provide some twinkle-toed magic, didn't he? There was one run from his own 22 that you just thought, oh, I wish you could...
Desperate. I was desperate for a bit more of that, and just thought, you know, one of those who light up the game would have just...
He is a thing of poetic motion, isn't he? Really is, when he's moving. It's a thing of rare beauty. But I wouldn't change Watson, and I wouldn't change Van der Merwe either. And I'd pick... I'd be there with Liam at 15, and I might even, just for the sake of being bloody minded and possibly yielding to the social media outcry, put Josh on the bench and then switch Watson to 15 if need be or whatever, rather than Hogg.
Yeah, don't know. It's It's a really tricky one, because I kind of just think, you know, how are we going to win the test, and what are those big areas of the game where it's going to get decided?
I just think Liam's a better sweeper. That's all. I don't think it's not to do with Liam picking the ball up on his 5-yard line and running through the defence. I just have that feeling he's a better sweeper.
He does read those situations well, doesn't he? And he's also aerially the best, isn't he?
I mean, he's also has a mistake in him or a slight thing to the, you know, he's not averse to a card error of judgment going for the ball on the ground. But that's what I'm going for. What about you, Jed?
Yeah, look, I think the argument you've made makes sense. If we were doing this as a selection panel as we did last week, I think you'd probably go Liam at fullback. I think you made pretty compelling arguments for that. I'm a massive fan of Stuart Hogg. I really like him. Like I say, I think that was a bit of a solid, if unspectacular, performance. I was kind of hoping that, again, there would be... It felt like he slipped a lot as well. And I don't know if I'm just, you know, that's me misremembering it, but I was kind of just hoping for one of those Stuart Hogg breaks, a bit like you said with Anthony Watson, just that bit of magic. Obviously, Liam's got that in him as well, but I was kind of just really hoping for a bit more of that, just magic from Hogg. And it didn't quite come. Again, not necessarily through any fault of his own, but I'd have no problems with I'm never going to have a problem with Liam Williams getting picked with a 15 on his back, because he's just an out top class performer. So I get the point about that kind of sweeping up, and that might tidy things up. And as we know, in those big games when people try and aerially bombard you, see the England game in 2019, you know, we all know what he's like, but even in the biggest games he does it and well and truly backs himself to do it. So I don't have a problem with it.
Before the games, the team was announced, I had Liam Williams at 15. I think I do think he's a, in my eyes, he's a better fullback than Hogg, and he does have less.
I just think they're different. I just think they're very different.
Yeah, I think, like, positionally, I think there's overall less mistakes. It's close, but I think there's slightly less mistakes. But I just wonder whether, from a managerial perspective, now that he's gone with Hogg in that back at 15, whether, you know, South Africa aren't going to change the game at all. They're just not. They're going to do exactly the same, but try and cut out the mistakes. And that's what it's going to be, isn't it? They're going to try and be a lot more accurate, cut out the penalties. They'll hopefully be that much fitter because they've gone through a full 80 at a high intensity. And because of that, I wonder whether the coaches can really work on, you know, getting better at what they got wrong. I don't know whether that will be the case. But I wonder whether there's anything in that, because South Africa do ultimately stick so much to the same game plan. Whereas other sides, you know, England would mix it up, for instance, wouldn't they? France, almost every other side would go, right, we can switch it. But they don't, do they? It's just, right, bang, same thing again, but better.
I think you're right with South Africa's game plan. That's the only way they play. I might question whether England under Eddie Jones have another way of playing. It's almost just like South Africa, but, you know, but not quite as effective at the moment anyway. I think I'd expect the same again. Is Liam better suited to fielding that than Stuart Hogg? Probably. I do think he's a class act, but the way he's used with Scotland is almost like a second playmaker as well, isn't it? So you have him drifting in, but we're not going to play that. I can't see him ever getting the ball at first receiver or getting a switch back from Dan Biggar. It's just going to be much more direct than that. So with that in mind, I think it probably makes sense to go with Liam.
Would you change the bench at all?
So what have we said? So Cameron Dickey would drop down there. I thought Mako was excellent off the bench. I thought Carl Sinclair was excellent off the bench. Mm. And so nothing there. Then if you got Byrne, I think you leave Byrne. Navidi, like we've said, I think I could see that being a a good argument. Yep. And then Murray, presuming biggest fit, Farrell. And then that 23 shirt, I suppose, is the only one. Yeston's keen on Josh Adams, Dan. I'd be more tempted to have Daly down there, actually.
That's a good shout.
Again, covers almost everywhere, and I just think that it then...
But Dan has kept... Dan's kept Daly in the team anyway, but...
Yeah, if Daly doesn't start, which I could well imagine, then I would... Yeah, I'd switch him to the bench, and then he covers, well, almost everywhere, doesn't he? Mm. But if the team stays the same, my change would be Navidi for Watson. Yeah.
Yeah. What are, just to wrap up then, fellas, what are we feeling about next week in terms of prediction? What do you think this is it? Gatlin going to go out, get the job done, or are we thinking this is going to go to a three test, you know, to a deciding third?
Yes, Dan, do you want to take that?
I can almost see the cogs in Dan's brain just like doing overtime.
You know what?
Yeah,
I quite like it to go to a third test, because if we're not going to see any thrilling, if we're looking at an arm wrestle, let's have an arm wrestle that we're biting our fingernails, you know, to the quick, you know, right up until the last minute of the third test. That's what I'm thinking.
Come pure on, drama.
That's the end. If you can't give us 18 tries a game, give us a heart attack or two along the way. Give us something to be, you know, to be excited about the outcome.
Rugby's so, version of Sylvester Stallone's arm wrestling classic, Over the Top.
Wow. That's good.
That's what we're after.
That is not on my radar, Jed. Oh, so
that's the rest of your evening taken care of.
Yeah, okay. Right. I didn't know he went... I'm surprised that the arm wrestling film didn't eclipse Rambo, but you know, but there you go. Yeah, that's what I'm going for. I think they'll come back. In all honesty, I can see the Lions winning the second test, but there's a little bit of me that thinks it would be nice to go to a third with it all in the balance, as long as there aren't too many Lions injuries in the process.
Dan, any clearer?
I guess it's a hope, really. I you mentioned it, Jed, that you didn't feel as if it felt like the Lions were really comfortable during the game, despite it being, you know, strangely, the Lions could have lost, you know, but it did feel like I had that feeling as well, that the Lions felt... It felt comfortable, didn't it? So I actually think the Lions, you know, the Lions can get the win. And I really would like us to do that, because I don't know whether Gatlin would do it. But if that was the case, that third test, I would love it to be like an, you know, all Matthew Morgans in the backs. For you and Yeston, and I'm with you as well. But like, just to see whether what could really happen with like a, you know, a super expansive and open back line where there's all sorts of trickery and you know, maybe it'd be a 50 points to SA. Who knows?
But with Owen Farrell at 12.
Exactly. Yeah. 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 Just for all the tricks, and then you go, bloody, I didn't know he had that in his locker. No, but. That's what I'd love it. I'd love the Lions to go out there and really, really take it to them physically, like we did in the second half, where they couldn't, I felt like they were clinging on, but to have that from the start.
I think that the Lions have kind of made their mistake in that first half, and I don't think they'll come out as poorly next week. And I think with that in mind, I just still don't see South Africa finishing stronger than they have done so far. They look, I don't know whether it's the COVID disruption, I don't know whether it's the 2 years of not playing together and, you know, not having, being perhaps quite as cohesive. I mean, South Africa have, I would say, more world-class players than the Lions do. And that's often, I think that can be telling. But at the same time, they're just finishing games so badly. If you look at the South Africa A game and against that one, if that carries on and the Lions are, you know, even 6 points down at half time, I can see them finishing the game much, much stronger. Something just doesn't quite seem right with the box, second halves at the moment. And, you know, obviously the kicking game that the Lions played, keeping the ball on field, very reminiscent of Wales under Gatland. Tire them out, we'll beat them in the last 20. And they did. And I just think that start a bit stronger, and I think the Lions will be too strong. So I am going for a Lions victory.
It was interesting. Warburton said something about just the fact that he thinks that there's, I think it was Warburton said it, that there are international captains on the Lions bench, and there isn't a better Lions bench on any given, you know, there isn't another international team that can cope with a Lions bench. And so therefore he wasn't stressed about this, the bomb squad or anything. And he might've actually been quoting Ronan O'Gara, but that's quite an interesting thought that I hadn't had, because obviously we'd managed. I think Murph has got a lot to answer for, don't you? Like, you know, talking about all these gigantic second rows that you know, we've never even heard of, that, you know, that are going to lumber into view. That makes you think that not just about fitness, but about strength and depth as well, in terms of coming on, and that perhaps we'd mythologized the South African bench a little bit too much. I mean, certainly, you know, you see Jantjies coming, or Willemse coming on, you're not going, here we go, you know, not in the way that you would do it with the All Blacks, for example.
No, exactly. You go back 4 years ago, and whoever it was, I don't know, was it Mwanga maybe coming off the bench, or maybe even he was starting, I can't remember. But either way, it's just whatever they've got on the bench, you know, there are, particularly at halfback, there are match winners there. We were fixated about the monstrous pack coming on.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right, you know, Elton Jankies, however you say it, isn't, he's always struggled at international level. That is definitely the weak link in South Africa's squad. So, but yeah, the Lions bench, whichever one of those benches we've mentioned, the one that played last week, they're all really, really strong. And I think that's going to be a big, big concern for Razzy Erasmus in the week.
Yeah.
Well, there you have it. It's all settled then. A big thank you, as always, to everyone for listening. Thank you to you, Dan, for not only joining us, but also bringing the positive vibes and the Owen Farrell fan club. Thank you as always to Yestin. And finally, a thank you to our sponsors at So Coffee Trades. If you want to get some great quality coffee, then make sure you head over to socoffeetrades.co.uk to do that. If you've enjoyed this episode, or indeed any of the episodes we've done over the Lions, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Just help us get a bit more easily discovered by fellow like-minded rugby fans who like listening to us prattle on about it. So really appreciate it if you do that. But we'll be back to chat rugby with you next week. Thanks for listening.
Podcast Network.